Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, hello, and welcome, or should I say welcome back, to the Indie Football Podcast live. I say live, not live, that's not the right word, is it? Certainly from Russia, either way.
Not on location.
On location, it is correct. And that, there, a little spoiler for the guest sat to my immediate right, Chief Football Writer of The Independent, Miguel Delaney. Hello, Miguel.
Hello.
How are you enjoying Russia so far?
Good. It's been intense so far due to news developments, as much as anything else. And we expected today to be busy with 2026, but then it became a whole lot busier because of what many are calling the World Cup's real first kickoff, the real shot of the one that really sparked it, the Spanish decision.
The mutiny of Krasnodar, as it was referred to in La Vanguardia earlier on. And Miguel, apart from spoilers, is not alone, because to my left is our Northern football correspondent, Mark Critchley. Mark, hello.
Hello, how's it going?
It's going quite fine. It's been a busy old day, as Miguel, I would say, alluded to, hammered it down everyone's throats. We will talk, I guess, about the two big stories of the day, which is Julen Lopetegui being sacked by Spain on the eve of the World Cup. We should also talk about the United 2026 bid, which was victorious at the FIFA Congress. And probably, I guess, a load of other things that will probably come up in the meantime. So, where do we start? So, notionally, the 2026 story is bigger, Miguel. But I feel you're not going to agree with that one.
Because that's something for the future. I mean, I'd also question why there was the need to have it on the eve of the World Cup itself. I mean, there's no precedent for that.
It felt like a burying bad news sort of decision.
But, I mean, the bad news only kind of came... Or like, well, FIFA thinking the bad news might be that it goes to Morocco. That was only something that really became a reality in the past 3 months.
So but it's also incredible that they are so aware that most of the decisions that come out of the organisation themselves are bad news that they would have to schedule it like that in the first place. Yeah. But away from the rights and wrongs, how do you feel about the successful bid and the fact that the 2026 World Cup will be held in the USA, Mexico and Canada? So the first time ever it's a three-nation joint hosting. First time ever of 48 teams, we expect. Third time Mexico has hosted World Cup games. Second time for the US. And first time for Canada, who I don't think have ever qualified for one. So how do you feel about all of that?
It's logistically makes sense because of the infrastructure. And this is the problem with going to 48 teams. I mean, this is really the issue with 32 teams. That there's only countries of certain sizes that can realistically host it. It's not going to be the World Cup as we know. It's going to be a bloated mess. So there's all of that. I was in Morocco in March, and what I think was a great country, and it would have been nice for such a country to get, for a new country to host the World Cup. Realistically, I don't think it was ready for it. But then the problem with that is, I suppose, the size the World Cup has become.
It was in many ways the complete contrast of two things that you get with FIFA, which is the one option was the developmental option, whereas FIFA want to be seen as, you know, in the same way that Sepp Blatter had his eyes on the Nobel Peace Prize. Infantino asked about how he felt it afterwards, he took that exact moment to announce, Gianni Infantino, that he would be seeking re-election as FIFA president. And when asked why, he said, because he sees in the eyes of the children of Rwanda and Myanmar and whatever.
You know, it's basically the opposite to Dave Cameron after Brexit. He realised he had no choice to go after that. Whereas for Infantino, he's seizing the opportunity. We've had a victory. Let's get on it again. We're back in, baby.
The opposite of Nigel Farage, who took about 3 hours after the Brexit result to start rowing back on those promises. But the thing with the Morocco bid was it was purely developmental. It was a second World Cup for Africa. It was a place with none of the stadiums there. You know, it was a completely, how would you say it, not quite pie in the sky, but the whole thing was to be confirmed almost. Whereas the American bid is, as you said, like all the stadiums are there and more. You know, if Cincinnati suddenly had a disaster, they could host it in Cleveland or Chicago, a couple of hundred miles away, without any problems whatsoever. So it will be a very different World Cup to what we would have got in Morocco. Chris, do you have any major thoughts on this? It feels like a pretty cut and dried sort of subject, really.
Yeah, no, I thought, I just wonder why. I suppose, did we really want a World Cup in Morocco? That's the question at the end of it, isn't it? I think the logistical problems that FIFA highlighted in their report stood out. Morocco, basically, there was a point system of about 500 points. Morocco got 2.7, yeah. So 270 points out of 500, a 2.7 rating out of 5. If they got lower than the 2, they would have been kicked out of the process automatically.
And the US bid got 4.0.
4.2, I think.
4.2. Right?
Yeah, so it doesn't really matter, does it, when the difference is that stark. So, but I think what made the real difference, and there's only one number that really matters, isn't it? And it was the one that the US bid flashed up on screen halfway through their 15-minute presentation at the end of the day.
14 billion.
Which is 14 billion, which is the total revenue they expect. 11 billion of which will be profit straight into the hands of FIFA. So when you up against those... The football family, sorry. Yeah,
fundamentally, you know, that's how you get re-elected in FIFA, isn't it?
Yeah.
You get more... they've got lots of different terms for it. Solidarity payments, development funds, all of this. Fundamentally, if you're giving money to the people who are voting you back in,
yeah,
that is how it works. So that was...
Clientelism.
Yeah, a long word from Miguel. So that is... pretty much as there is to say, I would say about you.
Are we kind of looking forward to the World Cup in the Americas? But like, you know, that's 8 years away. We're actually at a World Cup, and that's for me why the Spanish story is so much bigger, because this direct. I mean, this is so sensational. The Spanish story disrupts one of the favorites, one of the two most recent winners. Has a huge impact on the tournament to come.
Do you think it's bigger than Saipan? Because I know you wrote a dissertation, if that's right, about Saipan, and it's obviously such a big part of the island's football culture and history. Is this their Saipan moment in Spain?
Yeah, I mean, Saipan was massive for Ireland because of the fact that it was central to the host, but to the world at large, the Saipan story is probably really just about Manchester United's brilliant player leaving the World Cup. Whereas this feel like, I mean, that was one of the world's great players at the time. This is now maybe the world's greatest team. The team that could go on, or maybe should have gone on, or should be going on to win the whole tournament. So in that sense, it's big. Although, seeing the parallels are amazing. I mean, with Saipan, you know, the country was split, poll, you know, 50-50 over who was right. It came down to principle against pragmatism. There were civil war allusions in the media and on the radio, which is apparently what's been happening in Spain today. So, I mean, it really couldn't be more Saipan if it tried.
So let's go back to the start of this. Yesterday afternoon, that'd be Tuesday afternoon, spoiler alert, we're recording this on a Wednesday night. So Tuesday afternoon, out of the blue.
Just as we were landing in Moscow.
The announcement comes from Real Madrid that Julen Lopetegui will be their new coach. Somewhat of a surprise because he signed a new contract until 2020. When was that? 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Which was one of the first achievements of the new Spanish FA president, Luis Rubiales. More on him later. As it emerged yesterday, Florentino Perez rang Mr. Rubiales, Señor Rubiales, if you will, 5 minutes before that announcement to inform him that he would be taking Julen Lopetegui, which Rubiales was helpless to do anything about because there's a €2 million release clause in that contract, which is pretty cheap. The coach himself had verbally agreed to take that job, and there's very little that Rubiales could do about it. Rubiales, according to one report, did ask for a bit more time and was told no. According to a report in The Guardian by Sid Lowe, he then rang Lopetegui, who did not answer his phone. And then within minutes, the whole world knew that was happening. So at that point, Rubiales, like us, was in Moscow for the FIFA Congress at the Expo Center, which is where the World Cup vote went down today. Rubiales immediately left the UEFA hotel, got the first flight to Krasnodar down in the south, where Spain's base is.
Hand me that. I'd imagine we'd have more trouble if we... I mean, I was trying to book a new flight to Sochi last week or to Nizhny, and it was difficult.
I did wonder if it was a private jet, and if the Spanish FA can afford a private jet. But he went down to Krasnodar.
They're not getting the release clause now, are they?
Well, no. I mean, amazing. one of the Catalan papers published the stories. You know, again, like the Spanish FA doing Real Madrid a favour, making sure they don't have to pay €2 million. It's like, well, I don't think the Spanish FA were in the mood to do them favours. I think it was more, as you say, a principle of a pragmatism thing. I think, if anything, the Spanish FA are not doing Real Madrid many favours right now. More on which later. But yeah, so he gets to Krasnodar. By all accounts, pretty much all night discussions with a lot of people, yeah. A lot of what corporate people would call stakeholders. In the decision-making process, and then they announce there's a press conference today, and it gets delayed and delayed because talks are ongoing, and they keep going. And then there's reports that Lopetegui will stay because the players have intervened. Yeah. And then finally, the news drops, and Rubiales says he's gone. Well, he's had to go.
It was even before he said it. It was the fact that he came out to his press conference alone. And as I haven't watched the press conference since, he didn't seem furious at his press conference. He seemed kind of confident and assured.
He calmed a lot.
Yeah. It was the demeanour of someone who felt like having made the decision angry initially and then dwelt on it. He was still happy with it. And I have to say, I mean, earlier on today, I was kind of thinking, oh, the extremity of the situation because of the World Cup, just everyone's a bit like Roy Keane now. I almost think It's such a heightened situation, so unique a World Cup that just you swallow your pride and play. Let's get on with it. Let's do it. But I think the manner of the way Madrid and Lopetegui went about it, and the manner in which Rubiales found out, and then to add to that, the fact that he was so crucial in lobbying for a new contract for Lopetegui, the fact that was 3 weeks ago, I actually think he was left a little option.
So you think he was in the right? I don't really. For me, I think it's just rash. I think it's a typical kind of Latin rush of blood to the head. And most of the well-sourced reports that we've read so far suggest that Rubiales basically took the decision on the spot that he was going to sack him, nearly got talked out of it, and then fundamentally went ahead and just did it anyway. He's done that to the detriment of Spain's chances of winning the World Cup, which is, at the end of the day, the full objective of the Spanish FA's national teams. So he has, you know, completely compromised the ultimate aim for all of that organisation.
Well, I'd say Lopetegui and Madrid have compromised. It ultimately comes back to them.
I would agree.
They put Rubiales in an impossible position.
I would agree. Real Madrid, I think Real Madrid are mainly to blame, and from what I can gather, principally Florentino Perez, because Lopetegui was approached about this job for the first time last week and accepted it on Monday, Tuesday. Verbally, he hasn't signed a contract by all accounts, but he verbally agrees this. What is he supposed to do? Is he supposed to announce it 2 days before the World Cup? Is he supposed to sit on it during the World Cup and hope it doesn't come out? Which is
just inform his employees.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
No. I appreciate. And this is where Rubiales is. If you kind of watch the press conference, all the talk about valores, ethics, values, all the talk about this being a thing of principle, is because Lopetegui hadn't advised the Spanish FA. But something's gone on here where Real Madrid have, you know, try to rush this announcement out, and there's no obvious reason for it.
So you don't think Lopetegui had any inkling that Real Madrid may announce this before the World Cup?
Yeah, no. Well, as far from what I've heard, a player outside the Real Madrid crew. So the Real Madrid crew in the Spain squad knew. In fact, they had a part in the whole process of Lopetegui being hired. Someone else in the squad was aware, and I think basically Real Madrid panicked, and I think that. But either way, I agree with you. Okay, where Lopetegui is wrong is I think he should have told Spain. He should have, you know, assuming he deliberately didn't take that phone call from Rubiales, which we don't know, then he should have talked to Rubiales. But the fact of the matter is, there's no way that once he accepts that job, he can sit on that for the entire World Cup. It has to come out. Because if Real Madrid don't announce a coach for the duration of the World Cup, like, you know, the Spanish capital is going to be burnt to the ground. Like, there's no way that that's a feasible scenario. So if you choose Lopetegui to be your coach, which they've done,
but
if he agrees to be the coach, which he's done, then it has to be announced. And I think, so the only thing really is that he hadn't told his employers in time.
But that's why, because Madrid can't just be given a pass on this. They've thought they can go about this in the usual way they do. And it was interesting that the two media publications closest to Madrid, AS and Marca, they were very, very sympathetic to the whole situation and trying to couch everything in a way that, like, Madrid couldn't be blamed for this. But I mean, but this is a case of Madrid thinking they can go with their business in the way they want all the time. And we know the way they sign players, the way they try to destabilize things. So they thought they'd get away with it again. Whereas the uniqueness of this situation and the fact it was a World Cup and they were going for the Spanish national team's World Cup manager required, I think, a bit more delicacy and decorum from Madrid. They should have gone through proper channels rather than behind everyone's back. So I think it was up to them to make an approach to Spain first. And on the other side, it was up to Lopetegui to inform his employees, like, look, I've had an approach. And you know, we can say they kind of sat in that for the World Cup, but they didn't have to, had they gone about things properly, but they didn't. It's typical Madrid.
And I guess some of the other things that come out of it, like, yeah, as you say, the coverage of it has varied depending on where that particular newspaper is based within Spain. This shows, I guess, again, the lure of the club game over the international game. The fact that Lopetegui was perhaps willing to compromise the biggest club competition, oh no, sorry, the biggest football competition on earth for the biggest club on earth, which is what he's done, essentially. And, you know, I also theorised earlier what the reaction would be like if a Spain manager had walked out. But not walked out even, just had accepted the Barcelona. Basically, if this exact situation had happened, but with Barcelona instead of Real Madrid, how the reaction would have been in Marca or AS. I think it would have been apocalyptic.
The civil war rhetoric probably would have gone up a few notches.
No, it would have been absolutely huge. It would have been, especially with like the actual independence stuff that we've had in the last year or so, it would have been framed as Catalonia, Barcelona trying to undermine Spain's chances of winning the World Cup. Now, I don't believe Real Madrid have deliberately tried to do that at any stage, but I think Real Madrid have acted incredibly shoddily, basically, in this entire thing. And what's the result? The result is they've got a coach who's probably going to be hurt for some time by this. And I mean, reputationally, obviously, but kind of everything he's worked towards has just been dashed. It's been taken away from him.
It's soured everything. I mean, first of all, he said, I mean, as Sid alluded in his piece as well, it was only a few weeks ago when someone asked for Lucas Vasquez a Real Madrid question at a Spanish press conference, and Lopetegui made such a point of going, hey, this is the World Cup, as it, like, the implication being this is the biggest thing in the game, and now he's essentially scuppered that for himself. So it's soured a dream for him. He'll never get this opportunity again. The Spanish national team can never go back to him, and unless he does wonders with Madrid, which I think is unlikely. He's not going to get another international job. But then it's also soured the Madrid job itself, because he doesn't go in on the back of a World Cup campaign or this being the unbeaten Spanish manager. He goes in, you know, in disgrace, and, you know, and without that extra level of achievement. He's just qualified, but well done. Spain always qualified.
Who's he going to be remembered like Van der Lee, Luxemburgo, and like Bernd Schuster? Yeah. I mean, he could really just like burn out and that, and then, you know, if the Madrid job's a catastrophe, then where does he go from here? I mean, it's high stakes, but it's also high stakes, I think, from Rubiales himself. I mean, we say that he's perhaps made a decision based on emotion or principle, and he's maybe not thought about it too long. But he's staking a lot here by basically saying, right, I decided, no, you don't treat the Spanish Football Federation like that. And if this World Cup goes tits up for them and they're out in the group stage, then surely, I mean, I don't know as much about Spanish football as you two, but his position must be kind of untenable. After that.
To come in and to have to deal with this is obviously very difficult. I mean, he's always going to be this guy, isn't he? I mean, he's the central figure of one of like the great World Cup controversies in many ways.
I think he'll always have the scapegoat, though. I think even if they fail, they can put it down to Madrid and Lopetegui.
Yeah, and so Fernando Hierro, we haven't even mentioned this. Fernando Hierro, currently technical director of the Spanish FA, will slide into Lopetegui's seat for now, for the tournament at least. Not a great record as a coach, but then again, neither is Lopetegui, and we shouldn't dwell on how he's going to do at Real Madrid, because we can do that in August. But he failed at Porto. He's only really had success at Spanish under-21s, and you could argue that that was mainly down to a generation of incredibly talented players. So there are question marks over Lopetegui, who it sounds like might even be presented as soon as tomorrow, or if you're listening to this today, at the Bernabeu. So that'll be quite something. Do we think this affects Spain's chances of winning the World Cup, which is, at the end of the day, the biggest question you can ask?
I think it certainly does. I mean, we've seen teams go through, like, I don't know what else you'd call it, kind of an event or a trauma before a World Cup like this before. And we've seen also, you know, before the news today about him actually being sacked, we've seen managers go into World Cups with jobs arranged for the tournament after, and they still succeed. It happened with Conte, well, to an extent at the Euros 2016. Van Gaal did well with the Netherlands in 2014. Bobby Robson in Italia 90. But I just think the turmoil that it's thrown them into here, it certainly must have an effect. And we've talked about Lopetegui's credentials as a coach and whether they're all that. But I mean, what are Hierro's? I think he's had one. Is it 1 year in the second division
where
didn't quite make the playoffs? So it just throws. Before, like, we've been doing our previews all week, and it took me a good few days to try and decide between Brazil or Spain for a winner. But like, I don't think anybody can be seriously considering a real challenge from Spain now. Although with the talent they've got at their disposal, they could certainly still put one together.
And Migs, despite the circling of the wagons, Gerard Piqué, Sergio Ramos saying, I mean, Gerard Piqué's bizarre reference to some sort of like 1989 college basketball championship, as if that's the, you know, that's a real kind of strong precedent for them to follow. How are you feeling about Spain's chances, having been, let's remember, on Monday?
Yeah.
So bullish about their chances.
Yeah, I'm I'm much less so. I think they can still have a good World Cup. I still think they can win it. I just wouldn't have them as favourites now. I mean, there's a few angles to this, I suppose.
Who are your new favourites?
I suppose it has to be Brazil, doesn't it? Okay, boring as that is. Although, no, Brazil. But there's a few angles to it, I suppose. I mean, the one thing I have thought all along, I think, first of all, this Spanish squad is so good. I think this is the nature of a lot of international teams now, that they really, and because of the lack of time managers get with them as well, they don't really need full-on management in the way we would usually associate it. But they need kind of light touches and facilitating these squads, which is why I don't think the role of someone like Lopetegui is essential. And I think maybe if you look at his Porto career as well, where he had a failure in his one big club job, I think there was an element of he found himself in front of a very mature group of players who were among probably the had the best kind of game knowledge and tactical knowledge in the world, maybe. So there's an element of self-management to this Spanish team. But
like with Zidane at Real Madrid.
Yeah, like with Zidane at Real Madrid.
Which is why Lopetegui might be a good fit for Real Madrid.
Exactly. That's it. And yeah, which is why maybe some of the Spanish players, as we've heard, might have lobbied for him. But in terms of this kind of self-management, we've seen it. I mean, you could argue with Chelsea 2008 under Grant, Chelsea 2012 under
Rafa.
Under Di Matteo. Under Di Matteo,
sorry.
And we've seen it at World Cups before as well. I mean, it's just... So I do think they can do that, but maybe... Look, to be fair to Lopetegui, the one thing you would say about him is he had shown a little bit of tactical nous and a bit of variance that could be crucial in these games against other ultra-talented squads like Brazil, like Germany. And you can't really see Hierro making those same decisions. And the other side of it, I suppose, is the mental state of the team. I mean, to be going through all this 2 days before your big... And a match has now become the biggest of the group stage because of what we'll say about the entire tournament... To be going through this emotional turmoil and it's kind of tense 24 hours, it's hardly great preparation. They've got to come out of that. I mean, again, to allude to Saipan, even if it's on a lower scale, it did that had the effect of kind of rallying the Irish players. So we might see similar from Spain, but that's why this Portugal game is even more interesting, as much as kind of, you know, engaging or enthralling, because it's going to say so much about all this.
And if people want to read more about Saipan that you've referenced so many times, where would they read about that?
Dissertation. in a book actually called Stuttgart Saipan.
Yes, Stuttgart Saipan, a brilliant book, the best book I've never read on Irish football. So I guess the World Cup starts tomorrow.
Today,
depending on when you're listening. Again, breaking that fourth wall. Russia, Saudi Arabia, Critch, you and I are going to be at that one. And you were saying earlier on, you're really interested in the Saudi Arabian midfield.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, more what the Saudi Arabian midfield might do to my bank account, because Saudi Arabia are strangely long odds. I mean, we say strangely, we don't know what kind of machinations might be at work in this World Cup, but you know, we'll leave that there for our lawyers.
What do you mean by that? Sorry.
They can clarify that.
Okay,
later.
Fine.
But yeah, 9-1 to beat Russia, the other worst team in the tournament. I mean, I don't think any of us really know what we're going to expect, what to expect tomorrow. Apart from maybe just a really bad game, we hope not.
To bring the discussion on actually away from Spain and all that. That's one thing about this sentiment. I mean, yeah, there's been so much talk lately about what the World Cup has lost is that the football world itself is, we know too much about it now, so there's no kind of surprise anymore. Yeah, that's one of the great things about the first few games of the tournament, because these kind of questions and storylines have been building up and been asked for months. We're now finally about to get some answers.
And Miguel, they're shattering the idea I had for my piece tomorrow from the game. But I think it is interesting. We've got the hosts who have lost probably their best player, Cochrane, through injury months ago. We don't know what to expect from them because they just haven't been very good for a long time. Could they do a South Korea 2002, you know, complete with refereeing decisions? Could they flame out and then Russia just loses interest in the competition, which is obviously bad for the tournament and everyone here? Saudi Arabia, what on earth to expect from them? They've got by far the shortest squad in the entire tournament. Did you know that 69% of adult men in Saudi Arabia are classified as either overweight or obese? I learned that today. World Health Organization figures. So it is a peculiar game, and it is one of these where we don't know what to expect. And it's very rare, I guess, when you watch as much football as we have to, that there is a game where you just genuinely don't have a clue what's going to happen. And, you know, there aren't many scorelines that would surprise you with this one. But fundamentally, yeah, this is your first World Cup game. How does it feel?
Well, on a personal level, to be watching Russia versus Saudi Arabia in my first ever World Cup game.
Yeah.
It's going to be emotional. There may be a tear or two. I hope I just keep it together for the big stage. But like you say, it's such a peculiar game, and I think an element of that is because we're talking about two nations who are quite insular, and we can, you know, somebody else more qualified can perhaps talk about the political context of this game. I suppose they're both on different sides of the war in Syria, for example, but like on a fundamental level, we're talking about two football teams. I think Saudi Arabia, alongside England, are the only nation in the tournament whose players all come from the nation which they represent, Saudi Arabia.
They all play in.
And then with Russia, Jack Pitbrooks wrote an excellent piece on our website today about how their rules in their own domestic leagues enforcing through Russian players and having certain rules that mean only they play for the development of the of football in the country has actually set them back a long way and has, you know, resulted in a lot of frustration for people who've gone over there, like Andre Villas-Boas, for example. So we're kind of looking at two countries tomorrow who, like I say, are quite insular. You know, we don't know too much about them, and we're kind of feeling around in the dark. So, yeah.
It's going to be an interesting just clash. I'm also looking forward to the opening ceremony. Which, as always, will have like some sort of outdated pop star, some weird cultural dancing.
It's Will Smith, isn't it?
Will Smith and Dua Lipa is the
Robbie Williams, I think.
Robbie Williams.
Yeah.
Robbie Williams.
I think that was
in Russia.
Robbie Williams and Will Smith was definitely said to be doing it a few weeks ago. That's right.
Okay, so they're your outdated pop stars. Some sort of local dance, interpretive dance. I'll do a thing with loads of kids. So, you know, kind of loads of kids dancing around and making themselves all look happy and nice. Vladimir Putin is giving a speech, is the only thing I actually know about it, which we'll be probably confused by because don't speak much Russian, as has been probably the major discovery of the last 2 days.
Yes.
What's been your favourite thing about Russia, the country, so far, in terms of, you know, the last 48 hours of your life?
My favourite thing, I quite enjoy this cherry juice that we've just sampled at the moment.
Very very popular fruit juice here.
I actually
am black cherry.
A really big fan of eating in shopping centres, as we've done for the past 2 nights as well. And I'm recording this podcast from my bed, which is great as well. So like everything, so I don't know. I've come over here with I've tried to come over here with a very open mind. I think I think from what I've been told. Whatever you think about the country, whatever preconceptions you have, the people are going to be very nice to you. I think as soon as I get a few basic phrases down, maybe then they'll be able to be nice to me because they'll know what I'm talking about. So yeah, I mean, so far not too bad. I just hope we all get out alive and with our cybersecurity intact.
And Miguel, you've made some cultural observations since you've been here. What would you say your favourite things and least favourite things so far about Moscow and Russia itself?
Have I made cultural relations? I mean, our movement so far, just to again, I shim behind the fourth wall, basically, we got to the airport, we got to the apartment, we went to the essential equivalent of Westfield, which is beside our apartment, got supplies there, actually went to get keys cut there, and two things from that. First of all, if we couldn't just get keys cut there, but if you want, you could buy some weaponry there. some guns or knives.
An axe as well.
An axe, oh yeah, an axe. Secondly, haven't paid, you couldn't, what was it, about 25 quid?
Yeah.
For 3,000 rubles for our keys. None of the keys worked. So that was good.
Of all the difficult things to do in a foreign country when you don't speak the very complicated language that shares a completely different alphabet to yours, we asked the host of our apartment, which is a surprisingly spacious, if... how would you say, dated apartment.
It has some strange elements.
It has some strange elements, but otherwise it's pretty much fine. It's got a karaoke set. We asked him if we could have more than one set of keys because there are three of us staying here, and he advised us to go and get some cut. So we actually probably had no intention of doing that until we walked past a locksmith sort of place and got the keys cut, paid the man the money, and none of the cut keys work. So... a disappointing first step, and then yeah, what else did we do?
We went to the Luzhniki this morning to get our accreditation and get work underway. Of course, I had that photo that everyone was going to take by the end of the tournament, which is the statue of Lenin right behind
the Adidas fan store.
Yeah, the Adidas fan store, Coca-Cola store, and it's basically Lenin is looking out onto basically, you know, this extreme representation of capitalism right in front of him, which is, you know.
It's all the major FIFA sponsors, Hyundai and all the lads have got their own little weird little stalls and tents and stuff. And just all around the statue of Lenin, which, bizarre juxtaposition, but it is how the World Cup is, I guess, these days. I guess at some point we should...
one thing I should say, although to be fair, once we're in the media centre, very helpful, very helpful. Your man at the desk sorted me with a taxi for... actually, by the time you were listening, I probably had the flight for my trip to Sochi tomorrow for Spain, Portugal.
Well, I mean, depending on how much of an egotist you are, you can listen to this yourself on the plane tomorrow because I'll be editing this late into the night.
I hate sounding my own voice.
Do you know what that is? No. Apparently, I actually read something recently. The reason people don't like the sound of their own voice is because it sounds unfamiliar, and that's because when you speak, you are hearing the voice that comes from out of your mouth, but you're also hearing it echoing in the cavities inside your head. Mm-hmm. So it sounds completely different to what everyone else hears. That's why it sounds weird, and that's Fact Corner for the day. Before we go, we probably should ring up north to... the Arctic town of Rapino, where the sun doesn't set till gone midnight and comes back up again about 1 o'clock, where Jatpit Brook has been having, by all accounts, a splendid time and wants to talk to us about England. So we'll ring him up and then we'll be back in a moment.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Jack, hello, hello. We've just been discussing Rapinoe and how delightful it sounds. Tell us what Rapinoe is really like from someone who's actually there.
Hi, Ed. I hope you're having a nice time in Moscow. I'm in Rapinoe, where even though it's 11 o'clock in the evening, the sun is still up. I think that's probably the most interesting thing about Rapinoe. What the locals call the white nights. At this time of the year, it just doesn't get dark, which actually makes it quite difficult to sleep for some of us. But the England players insist that they have good enough curtains and blinds that not to be a problem. Rapinoe itself is basically just a strip of road along the side of the Gulf of Finland with a few hotels and restaurants in. I mean, we were told that this was where kind of rich St. Petersburg people come on holiday, but apparently they actually go to a kind of slightly nicer bit just further inland where the Croatian team are staying. I mean, if you were to draw a scale with the kind of isolation of Rustenburg, England's 2010 camp on one end, and Baden-Baden, which was a kind of frenzy of shopping and drinking on the other, we're certainly much closer to Rustenburg. I mean, there isn't really very much to do here. And the England are putting quite a lot of faith in the power of video games and Fortnite to keep their players entertained while they're here.
Okay, and England trained for the first time today up at their base up there in the woods, in the forest. How was their first open training session that you could go to? And I believe some locals came along as well.
So England arrived here in Rapinoe on Tuesday evening, and today they had their open training session at the training ground they built for themselves at Zelenogorsk, which is a 10-minute drive up the road from Rapinoe. It was a nice day, to be honest. They had lots of local children and fans here with England shirts and England flags. It was a pretty gentle session, nothing too competitive, you know, starting with warm-up and then into small-sided possession games. At the start of which, England were presented with a kind of ceremonial decorated loaf of bread and a large ornamental teapot by the by a local politician who wished them all the best. It sounds really nice, and it was quite nice, but you know, this is ultimately like a FIFA mandated thing. Like, FIFA demand that every country hold an open training session with locals as soon as they get there. And now that that's been got out of the way, England's training sessions will be a lot more private as they build up to the Tunisia game on Monday night.
And how are the players in general? Are there any injuries, any knocks to be concerned about?
It actually wasn't the whole England squad out training today. Marcus Rashford missed training, having picked up a slight knock in England's final training session in the UK before they flew here. That's a shame, because Rashford obviously scored a fantastic goal against Costa Rica at Elland Road, and that was really one of the few selection decisions that Southgate had to make going into that opening game in Volgograd. I mean, if Rashford had any chance of supplanting Raheem Sterling in the starting 11, he certainly doesn't if he's carrying a knock. So I think we can safely say that Sterling will be starting up front alongside Harry Kane against Tunisia.
And what would you say are the main selection issues? You know, if we're talking about who might get picked where, the injury things, the just general selection issues ahead of the Tunisia game.
So there's really just two selection decisions left for Southgate. One is between Eric Dyer and Jordan Henderson in holding midfield, and it looks like it's going to be Jordan Henderson who gets the nod, England's vice-captain. The other, which I think is more of a 50-50, is Ashley Young and Danny Rose at left wing-back. Initially, Southgate took Rose with the hope that he would get fit enough in the two friendlies to be able to start against Tunisia, having only started 9 Premier League games for Tottenham this season. But, I mean, based on the friendlies so far, you have to say that Young looks slightly sharper than Rose, and that means that it would be a bit of a punt really from Southgate if he's to pick Danny Rose in Volgograd on Monday night. That said, I do think, personally, I think that England could do with Rose out there, just because, you know, Young isn't really as quick and he's a right footer, which means he always comes inside, and England perhaps lack a little bit of width if they play with Young instead of Rose. So that's really the only big decision that Southgate's got going into the game. But I did think the mood today was positive, relaxed, the same as it's been for a few weeks now with England, although, as we know, in a tournament, as soon as it starts, you know, things can go very wrong very quickly.
Okay, thank you, Jack. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, I guess. Tomorrow night, it will be me and Critch here in Moscow. We will have been at Egypt versus Saudi Arabia.
Russia, Saudi Arabia. That's where we are.
Russia, Saudi Arabia. That's exactly the country we're in. We'll be talking Russia, Saudi Arabia. We'll be talking the opening ceremony. Miguel will be in Sochi for Spain, Portugal. Miguel, are you going to call in tomorrow night? Probably not. Miguel sounds like he's going to be too busy. We've got two press conferences tomorrow night. One is Fernando Hierro speaking, and the other one is Lopetegui, probably been announced as a Real Madrid manager, so you'll be very busy. We have so much good stuff on the website. I implore you, urge you, and quite possibly beg you to go and check it out. A 50-page supplement if you subscribe to the Independent app, which is, for those who like newspapers in their traditional form, that's what it is. It's just lots of our stuff presented in a newspaper format. You swipe through it on your iPhone, iPad, Google Nexus device, whatever electronic thing you hold in your hand these days. And so there's so much to be getting stuck into, and if you could see the list of stuff that's coming out over the next few days, I can promise you there's a load more. So thank you for joining us again for the daily edition of the Independent Football Podcast. We will be back tomorrow. Please tell your friends, subscribe, rate and review. And until then, what's goodbye in Russian?
Dasvidaniya.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.